I'm John Price. I'm going to keep walking around like the National Grid and the professor from physics. And hopefully I can keep up with them as well. Yes, indeed. So I can't see the minute silence. So I'm from five universities, and we work together on energy policy and targets, so which would please the professor. So I wanted to start by talking about the fact that I think that we probably have the full toolkit to solve our energy issues. And I very much support what was just said at the end there, that we probably do have a problem, and two problems are one with governments and one with people. We project how energy will be used, but people use energy in very different ways. If I get this right. So I want to talk very much about how, well, we have targets, and it's a fact of reality that under the Kyoto Protocol, developed countries have targets. And obviously developing countries have more voluntary-based emissions called NAMAs, Nationally Appropriate Mitigation Actions. Now, the problem is, how do you convert national targets to local targets? And that's a huge problem for governments and policymakers, and very much for city mayors as well. For those on the right, what I want to show is this simple chart here. It's a carbon impact chart. What I'm trying to show here is that because of background trends and looking forward in rising energy prices, and if we're looking at if Richard and Nick at the National Grid do get it right and decarbonise the grid, then we would expect to have at least a 20% reduction in carbon emissions. So by doing nothing, we're probably going to have a reduction of 20%. Now, where we do have targets, be they right or wrong, those targets are a lot greater. So in the UK, we talk about 80% and talk about 2050. Other countries have 30% in 2020 and the other way around. Depends which country you're in. But how do you actually make that very critical reduction if, in fact, targets are the right thing to do? Now, there are ways of doing this by cost-effective measures and cost-neutral measures. And I wanted to just talk about those very, very briefly. So hopefully that was the same solution for the people on the other side of the room, with very much looking at the grey line there for being the 20% reduction. So where do we start? So this is the issue for how do we get action? If we've got national targets, how do we get action? So how does a city mayor, I'm not sure if there is a mayor of Warwick or not, but if there was a mayor of Warwick, there is a mayor of Warwick, how does he decide what to do tomorrow, given a national reduction target of 80% by 2050? He's probably only going to be a mayor for a year or two. So how can he think about that period of time? Now, if we think globally that about 50% of the world's population live in cities, and cities are probably responsible for more than 50% of carbon emissions, you could sometimes argue that to be over 70%, and they're responsible for more than 50% of economic output. So the logic I'm presenting here is that cities could be where you would start doing the action, because cities would understand what works within their city-scale sectors. So cities become very, very important in responding to climate change. Now, faced with a vast array of technologies, we've seen a lot of them shown on the slides today, the very options from the National Grid and your good self. What do you do as a city mayor? What do you do as a metropolitan government about reducing the impacts of climate change? The lack of uncertainty around those technologies and how to fund those technologies leads to inaction. So unless those are understood, we're not going to get the action anyway. So technologies alone are not enough. So the key issue here is, how do we solve those? How do we remove that uncertainty? How do we select which technology to use? We're going to talk about energy storage, which is the right technology to use for energy storage, which are the right solutions in the scenarios for the National Grid, which are the right scenarios, as you spoke about there, for that Warwick are looking at as well, for the Forum for the Future scenarios, which is the right one? And how do you actually resolve that? And are these cases that people build, do they also address the business and the social case? So how do you actually prioritise to spend on technology or to spend money on alleviating fuel poverty or improving health? Now, the case for the developed world is very, very different from that from the developing world. You make very different decisions in Warwick than you would do in Calcutta or in Lima. So it's a very, very complex situation for city mayors to understand. Now, we can do a lot of the economics and work out what those savings would be. And we just saw an example here of a city region. This is probably a region of around 3 million people of around $50 billion GDP. And there are savings to be had by cost-effective interventions on technologies, a right array of technologies, in various sectors of industry, commercial, domestic housing and transportation, which could impact the total energy bill for a city. So if an energy city's bill is probably around 10% of GDP, which is probably going to rise to about 15% in the next 5 to 7 years, how can you How can you negate the cost of that rising cost of energy to that city? What would you do? So this one, some economic forecasts could show that you could, in fact, make quite a considerable saving on that energy bill. But I wanted to talk about that as being just the theory. So we can all wax lyrical around the type of technologies we should use and how they should be applied, but we don't really consider about the public perception around those technologies as well. Now, if we look what's happening in Europe and around the world right at the moment, we have a lot of talk about carbon capture and storage. Did you give that one a tick or a cross? I can't remember. I think you gave it a cross, didn't you?
No, I hope it works.
You hope it works, okay.
Well, there's all sorts of caveats.
All sorts of caveats, okay. So carbon capture and storage, and yes, using CO2 is probably better than storing where you can, but obviously we're limited in terms of the abilities to do that. But in Germany has effectively rejected carbon capture and storage because if you think about having supercritical CO2 piped into your house, to some people that sounds like it's a bomb, it's supercritical, it sounds dangerous. If you're going to store CO2 in saline aquifers, in your water, that could lead to the water being polluted. So people don't like that. You talk about nuclear. We've seen nuclear because of what's happened in Japan. People are rejecting nuclear. And I think Germany are saying no to nuclear at the moment as well. So it's no to CCS and no to nuclear. So they're already reducing their opportunities for having a lower carbon supply. Now you can take that, that approach into many other technologies as well. We've seen in the UK a very, very slow start in doing CCS because of the economics. We've seen a slow start to CCS in many other countries around the world as well. But we've also seen the advent of shale gas. Now, shale gas mentioned before, I think, is a very interesting technology. It's a very interesting solution because if you were the Treasury of the United Kingdom, faced with a recession and declining ability to use budgets, one of your best options is to have a low-cost supply of energy. So why would the Treasury let our government department spend any more money around climate change if we all had low-cost supplies of energy? Now, I think shale gas in the US is trading around $2 to $3 on the Henry Hub. So that's a very exciting, situation for America. And the Chinese could perhaps sometimes call that the reindustrialization of America, which can make America more competitive again. So I'm going to leave you with the thought that perhaps there are lots of technologies. It's very, very difficult to know how to use them. People don't necessarily use them how you would expect to use them. For example, in the theory, in the economics, and in the government policies, we assume people like to live, for example, in a room with a very, very neutral environment, with a controlled temperature in a building. So we always plan to have energy savings from buildings, but in fact, we probably get about 50 to 80% variation in that performance from planned to delivered in situation. Because in fact, people like to adapt. People like to open doors and windows, so you never really do get that planned reduction in energy. So the problem is very, very complex. The solutions are very, very broad. And I think shale gas is providing a very, very interesting solution to many of these. Thank you.